Oak session number 14208, reel 2.
Sergei Saganov, reel 2.
And certainly it was, I behaved very uneasy with my fellow students in the school. They were a little bit more aggressive to me. I came from an environment where people were maybe more intimidated, but less formal. I came to a new sort of a new setting, and the new setting was people were extremely formal and much less friendly, very aggressive, and I would say even a little bit irritated. I was not, let's say, the time when I came in Russia, let's presume it was 74, 75, it was the, I would say, the most, how to put it, the highlight of the Brezhnev regime. That's when he was already accepted in a country which I was missing from for quite a while, almost as a god. And when I came back, I didn't understand the cult, we call it the cult of personality thing. And I had to adjust to it. And the lesson was taught in a very severe way. Whenever you do something wrong, your parents are called to school. The political line is explained to them, then it is explained to you. You're subject to all kinds of punishments. You have to go read this particular book, or the Code of the Young Pioneer, or the Code of Young the Komsomol Member, or do all kinds of stuff just to rehabilitate yourself in the eyes of the school management, especially the ideological part of it. Since I was missing for quite a long time, studied in an Indonesian school with distinctively different values and approaches to education, I had to readapt myself in the country. Language and mannerisms, I had to deal with that a lot, trying to change it and become more conformist type of a personality. It was not very easy. It resulted sometimes in beatings or in severe kind of arguments with the fellow students. Or was transferred from several schools before I found the right one where the conditions were right. And I was only after 2 or 3 years after the return back to Russia. So it left me with a certain amount of grievances about the system, about the way people were treated there, and in a little bit with the realization that I might not be the true Russian, and maybe even I would even go further and say that maybe with the first realization that I'm very different from others, and it just felt very different. I felt I should not consider it to be one of them anyway.
Of course, as you were growing up, getting older than your 13 mm-hmm. years, this would have been the time, I suppose, Jimmy Carter, first of all, the American president.
78, yeah.
Yeah. And then, the beginning of the war in Afghanistan, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And a new phase of Cold War, as it's been called, hasn't it? The second Cold War from 79.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but political scientists give that description in the West. Would you agree with that? Do you think, living in Russia, being brought up in Russia at that time, that you realised there was another stage in the relationship between the East and West?
I should admit I'd never noticed the difference. I believe that the Cold War was very much of a perpetual thing through the 70s and the beginning of 80s. The only warm period of time was with the SALT I signing in Vienna, 1978, but neither I nor a good deal of other contemporaries of mine were able to understand the significance of the signing ceremony in Hofburg Palace at that time. I believe that there was indeed a small thaw between Russia and the West. I do not believe, though, it was a long one and it was an intended one. I think it was a period of time when the U.S. needed, or maybe the West generally, but presuming that the U.S. is a leader of the Western countries even now, one can say that maybe West was really needed a break, needed a for political reasons, primarily sort of mollifying local citizenry in all the countries with some peaceful results, sort of featuring that the countries are the governments of the countries are not particularly aggressive. They're interested in performing as a peacekeepers, peace givers to their I would say in many ways paranoid citizens, because needless to say how afraid people were of the Cold War in the U.S. I believe it was similar in Europe, and the change was needed, and the warmth and the thaw was needed in a relationship. I believe Russians and Russian government exploited it in the best interests of Soviet propaganda. I do not believe that Russian government indeed needed that kind of thaw. I believe it was an excellent excuse for Russians, or an excellent pretext for Russians, to say that the West is weak, the communist ideology is winning, we put those guys in the West on their knees, that type of rhetoric. Living that at that time in the country, I didn't notice it and I didn't understand it then. It is obvious for me now, but at that time there was no enthusiasm. There was no exhilaration of the one which came much later under Gorbachev about the freeing of the country, opening the doors. It was still the same Stalinist, authoritarian, closed society with very confined borders and strict formal ways of doing things. It was by no means the country which was changing to embrace all the thaw changes, all the warmth between the West and the East. That makes me to think that there was no interest in on the Soviet Union's part to make the relationship warmer, more open, and I don't think it was in the best interests of the Communist Party elite to go ahead and talk about nuclear armaments. Saltman Treaty was just a propaganda trick on the Russian part, the way I see it now. At that time, the only thing we remember is the first handshake and kisses between Carter and Brezhnev, again in the Hofburg Palace, but that's all the memory and recollection I have at that time.
How about Ronald Reagan when he came along and you had, you know, did you get the rhetoric of the evil empire? Was that sort of...
I don't want to pay a great compliment to Britain, but I would say that Margaret Thatcher's image is much more stronger in Russia than Ronald Reagan's. Sure, there was a great change in the U.S. Sure, there was a new blood, new type of ideology. That was clear to me and at the time of my friends and contemporaries. It was clear to me, first of all, because it was a striking change from the Carter's time. Secondly, I was old enough, I think, to understand the differences between the two individuals. Thirdly, there was a good deal of Russian propaganda stating that the toughest politician in the U.S. history came to power to confront the socialistic values in Russia, and therefore there should be a good deal of a rebuff, and the country should get together realize what should be done to fight back. And there were all kinds of new rules brought in the schools and in the social life, which were supposed to mobilize nation mentally and allow people to be more properly reactive to whatever happens in the States. But it was really the Margaret Thatcher's image which changed the whole Reagan era type of a confrontation, because I would dare to say that she was much more subtle, knowledgeable, and eloquent as a foreign diplomat and a message carrier rather than Reagan was. She was traveling to Russia more oftenly. She was certainly she was certainly perceived in Russia as as an influential, sensible, and convincing person, rather than Reagan, who was considered to be more cowboyish, Texan, rough personality. Of course, this is coming out of my mouth of a person who did not belong to the the average Russian family, but rather than to the elite. Therefore, I was maybe more privileged in terms of understanding the differences. But I would think that Reagan's appearance on the political scene in the U.S. Brought two basic effects in Russia: the realization of something different, something revolutionary happening across the ocean, and at the same time something more crude and in many ways blatant than it used to be. In Europe, it had a very different in the perception of Europeans in the Soviet Union, it had a very different effect. I don't know whether I was understanding that at that time, but it seems to me that Europeans were viewed as more subtle people to deal with in resolution any of the conflicts with the U.S. So there was sort of suggestion to have surrogate relationship with the Western European countries rather than to deal with the U.S. directly.
Margaret Thatcher, did you call her? Did you have a special name for her?
In Russia, yes, she was. I guess the name, which was used in Europe widely as Iron Lady, was adopted in Russian and translated in Russian and used in Russian as a very common name. And I believe that indeed, as a phenomenon, it happened maybe for the first time in the country. Neither once in the history of political jargon in Russia, the name or a nickname like that was actually translated into Russian. I don't remember. The Russian translation for her is "железная леди," is a very unique term. The name of the prominent U.S. president FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, never been, abbreviated in Russia or never been translated. Neither was the name of Churchill in any way, interpreted, or neither one of those cliches were given for his, political portrait. So I would consider it to be unique experience in Russia.
Was it a complimentary term? Was this to be called an Iron Lady by Russia? Was that complimentary?
Yeah, I believe it was. Again, talking generally about Russia as a country where strong terms are highly appreciated, a country where everything of a great magnitude is considered to be the best. Certainly the word iron, even with the, I would say, ironically, with association of name Stalin, and of course, as you know, Stalin means in Russian steel, is something which sort of fosters the power image. And in this respect, it is very, very welcomely perceived in Russia. And people generally respect power, clout, and I would say rather independent stance. Since the nation is generally collective-minded, and to see an individual who is rather independent, strong, having a lot of people who gravitate to an individual, that suits the Russian personality real well. That sounds like a chieftain or leader personification in Russian mentality. That's what people tend to favor.
What would you say your image of the West was, during this Cold War period? Well, for instance, when you thought of the United States, what did you imagine it would be like? Given the information you had been given throughout your young life?
It was very different. I must admit, my perception of the West was very different from the perception of my friends or fellow classmates. I believe I didn't have a lot of friends or a lot of conversationalists who shared my view that, even at that time, that the West is very different, that there is the U.S. and this is the Western world in Europe, and there are plenty of other countries which are split up in different kinds of shades and forms of, Cold War adversity. The reason, again, is that I was privileged to travel, others were not. Generally, the perception of the West was as something behind the fence. I think that would be the most generalized, imprecise, but on the same time correct assumption. Nobody had any particular idea what's behind the fence. Aside from the reports, distorted reports on TV, in the newspapers, which were rarely read by youngsters or people of my age at the time, the perceptions were very blurred for them. They thought it's a the countries are forbidden fruit. There are plenty of things happening there which are not happening in Russia, and that they understood real well simply by the lack of the desired goods like jeans or bubble gum, all kinds of stuff. And of course, everybody knew where it came from. Therefore, the feeling was, yeah, it's something out there, somehow it produced and somehow it delivered here. And it's all interesting, fashionable, desirable, and the general idea was to get it. But the mentality dictated that why don't we get it within the country, not outside? Because outside, everything is kind of forbidden, unallowed, non-encouraged. Again, I would say that the difference was there, and I saw the difference. It was, for example, in that all the Western European movies were more or less freely featured in cinema theaters in Russia. Americans never. American movies were never there. It would be a rare case where an American movie would be displayed, but it would be necessarily a movie about blacks or a racial discrimination or something which would only support the Communist Party line. And that happened not always. It happened very rarely to find that kind of a production. As to Western European movies and culture, popular culture generally, say British pop music, it was considered to be generally non-offensive, non-ideological, a little bit something which was not exactly in line with the Communist Party moral policy. But it was tolerated because it was not, as long as it was not repulsive, it was considered to be fine. So I was brought up in the atmosphere of Uriah Heep and Smokey, pop groups, music, and watching all kinds of French and Italian comedies and all over the place in Moscow. Having magazines like, called Anglia or England, very small kind of illustrative format, reading those magazines freely because they were on sale, and you could even subscribe for them, and doing all kinds of different things, everything but not traveling to Western Europe, which was not allowed, of course. And, of course, we were not of that age to travel anywhere in the world. So, for me, it was obvious that there is a distinct difference between treating U.S. and treating the West. By the West, I mean the Western European countries. Indeed, under Reagan, one could have observed the extreme tightening on everything American and a little bit more freedom on everything European. I'm sorry.
So as you were, getting into your higher education, what sort of career were you going to go into?
I was almost predestined to be either a historian or a diplomat or something international. That was very certain to me. Again, two reasons. First, like I said, at some point of time, I understood that I'm not exactly Russian as a Russian. I lost my Russian identity in say 100% at some point. And maybe became 70% Russian, and just recently came to almost a zero. So it's just, like I said, being in a foreign country strips you off of some certain identity features. The other thing was, of course, being in a family of mine where people were interested in international politics and international history, world history generally, for a long time. My grandfather on the father's side being a communist, but was extremely interested in personalities like Churchill and Roosevelt. He wrote about their careers. Of course, it was a communist leader type of description of their history, political history and stuff, but one should take into account at least he was interested in that type of thing in the country where not a lot of people, aside from especially assigned people, were allowed to be interested in the career of Roosevelt or Churchill, which shows something. My father, of course, being a Moscow State University student first and then professor and visiting scholar and the person who was interested in foreign cultures, the first the person who taught who've learned five languages and speaks them almost freely, certainly it influenced me, influenced my brother, and influenced pretty much the careers of both of us. So I believe in Russia the family trade is a very common thing. It happens with almost every family, and very often a son or a daughter prefers to follow the steps of the father in whatever they do. I didn't happen to follow an exact say semblance, but sooner or later I think I will wind up to be just like my father, maybe a scholar. So
you went, you became a journalist, did you? Was that, you know, quite mm-hmm. For someone with your background, that was fairly straightforward, was it?
No, it was not. As a matter of fact, I was always thinking about myself as an academic person. I was interested in developing myself as a, say, maybe a professor, a teacher, maybe a researcher. So when I graduated from the Moscow State University, just 1 year after Gorbachev came to power and the real perestroika came in, I thought, well, I want to be a graduate student and then move to the postdoctorate and go ahead and be an academic person. Turned out that it is not expedient. It was not expedient at that time. It was merely a necessity of the time to become more close to the political changes. And the country was opening up. And, of course, one of the rationale of being, being an academic person was that I wouldn't be allowed to travel abroad and be international. Therefore, I would have to find my a typical rational way of escapism from the reality and just sort of be in international academic circle where people are sort of live by their own life and study and research and do their things and occasionally allowed to travel, but not often. But so I was preparing for that. Turned out the country is opening out much faster than I thought. So I thought instead of having a lengthy academic experience, I should go directly into the international journalism, something which would allow me to touch things which were not allowed for so many times. Therefore, I just used any pretext to get associated with one of the journalistic agencies. And it was not very easy because in 1986, Gorbachev almost proclaimed the Glasnost or Openness campaign, where newspapers and magazines were invited to write openly about what's going on in the country, including criticism on the Communist Party and Communist Party membership. So it appealed to me a great deal, and I rushed into journalism and found out that there were no free spots to occupy. And I must admit, with some proper connections, and of course in Russia connections mean a lot, with my father's help, I managed to find a very insignificant job with a publishing house, which took me all the way to the editor's desk. And then from there, it was a very boring job. I never thought I would be a publishing specialist or editor in a publishing house. I always thought about in-field profession, although I must admit at some point it suited me well, because a publishing house is a little bit more academic environment rather than field reporters type of a job. But I wound up later reporter and editor of the news desk and enjoying all the fruits of the glasnost, which I believe was the only great asset of the Gorbachev's time.